Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So if wealthy Republican donors made a difference in the Scott Walker race, as we heard, get ready, Obama and Romney. Wall Street money went 2-for-1 for Obama over John McCain, but is now trending nearly 3-to-1 for Romney. We'll talk about that, some of Governor Cuomo's own Wall Street money tree, and more now with Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and director of the Business Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Hey, Greg, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning.
You often write from a conservative perspective on economic issues, like against Occupy Wall Street, but you wrote this week that the Wall Street-Romney alliance will hurt candidates, the securities industry, and possibly the rest of us as well. Why do you think so?
Well, I think there are three reasons to think that. The first reason is that because President Obama is not getting any significant Wall Street money, he's completely unrestrained in the sort of class warfare campaign thrust that we've heard a fair amount on. And indeed, you remember, we didn't have much of that in the last campaign. So, there have been other stories, especially in the New York Times, about how upset the Obama fundraisers are that they can't raise any money from Wall Street. So I think that's going to contribute to the kind of campaign President Obama will run, thinks he needs to run to win, which is simply really emphasizing the class warfare issue. I don't think it's particularly good for Romney either, because it seems to me that Romney's most important problem is convincing Americans that he's not just a rich guy looking out for other rich guys to plunder the rest of us, and this is not going to help. Last, I don't think it's good for Wall Street, because this is just another blow to their credibility when it comes to how they're going to be regulated and what size of financial industry we want. I mean, in the event Romney wins, people will assume, with some degree of credence, that Wall Street bought itself a more important seat at the table when we figure out what to do about the financial industry and avoiding another meltdown.
In saying that Obama will try to win in the face of having not much Wall Street money by going all populist against them, it kind of implies that Wall Street going all in for Romney could actually help Obama win. Could that much money backfire?
Yeah, of course it could. It all depends on how well the president does in making this case and how much people agree with it. Now, the reason that I think it's bad is I want to look beyond the election, and there are two enormously important and difficult problems. The first one is what's being called the fiscal cliff, and that is on January 1st, taxes will go up sharply, all kinds of taxes, not just the Bush tax cut, but the payroll tax cut disappears at a time when enormous budget cuts will take place. And if you believe at all in Keynesian economics, that's not going to be good for the weak economic recovery we have. And then secondly, beyond the fiscal cliff, the United States debt has gone up by more than 50% during the Obama administration. It's headed to something approaching 100% of GDP, and that's a long-term problem that needs to be tackled. And it's hard to see how this polarization, which has clearly been around for a long time, to the extent that this election is divisive and bitter, will get us any closer to a solution.
And talk about the fiscal cliff a little more coming at the end of the year. What exactly is at the bottom of this cliff, and what kind of decisions will either President-elect Romney or President-re-elect Obama have to make regarding it?
Well, there are three in particular. The first one is that the Bush tax cuts disappear. Now, most of the conversation about the Bush tax cuts is focused on the rich and whether their tax cuts should be eliminated. But what few people spend much time on is the fact that the Bush tax cuts lowered taxes for everyone and especially eliminated taxes entirely for a large number of people who don't make a lot of money. So all those taxes rise on everybody on January 1st if something isn't done about it. The second part is, and it's clearly less important, but for 2 years now, we've cut the Social Security payroll tax by 2 percentage points, more for self-employed people. That expires on January 1st. And the third part is when we solved the last government shutdown defaulting on the debt crisis, we did so with automatic cuts to social programs and defense that kick in on January 1st if we don't do anything about it. Congress doesn't have to pass legislation to have these cuts. They've already put it in effect unless we do something about it. Just yesterday, Bill Clinton came out and said that we need to extend the tax cuts, and my reading this morning says Larry Summers did the same thing. And there's been increasing talk about the fiscal cliff and what it might do to the economy.
We're talking about money in politics with Greg David from Crane's New York Business and the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll get to this Cuomo Committee to Save New York story along the same lines in a minute. But George in Bay Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Thanks for taking my call, Brian. The guest mentioned 3 times in his opening statement the term class warfare. And when you asked him a question, you tiptoed around it and mentioned the word populism. So I'm just wondering, like, in the last 30 years, the disparity between incomes on the top percent or whatever you want to call it, just pointing this out, is this really class warfare? And how this might affect our economy as a whole. I mean, I'm a business owner, and it's gotten way out of hand, the disproportionate. I mean, when they made the Citibank shareholders fund about the CEO when they denied him his bonus. I mean, isn't this in the air? I mean, saying that this is President Obama's tax warfare plan, this is nonsense.
Class warfare, it's a great question. And, you know, Warren Buffett has said there is class warfare in America. My class started it, and we're winning. And, of course, meaning the concentration of wealth that's taken place over the last 30 years in this country. So, Greg, how do you see that and the legitimacy of the term class warfare from your perspective?
Well, what I want to do is, so much of this isn't based on any facts, so let's start with some facts. So inequality is worse in New York than anywhere else in the country, everyone believes. And it's based on a Fiscal Policy Institute study, which says the top 1% had 44% of the income in 2007, compared with, I think, a much lower percentage in 1987. That's factually true. In 2009, the top 1% of income in New York City fell to 30%. So, to be specific, while inequality has grown over time, in the period from 2007 to 2009, for which we have statistics, the inequality declined sharply,
but
and the percentage
just
of income of the lower of people in the bottom 90% grew dramatically.
But isn't
so
that,
the issue is much more complicated than the rhetoric would lead you to believe.
Aren't the New York stats just a blip, though, in the national context?
Well,
because
right,
Greg, let me finish. We have, all the Wall Street money here, a lot of very rich people concentrated in New York, and so some of them got less rich after the financial crisis began. But the big
trajectory.
The national
numbers did the same, Brian. Brian, the national numbers did the same. They fell dramatically, and inequality in the nation as of 2009 was no worse than it was in the 1990s. Now, the answer is, of course, that the reason for this is that people who are rich get most of their income, large amounts of their income, from investments of all kinds. And investments go up and down dramatically, and that's true. And it's even possible that the numbers are rebounding since then. But I find it just amazing that when I hear politicians talk in New York about these numbers, they use 2007 numbers rather than reflect what's happening. As a matter of fact, John Liu wrote a whole report about inequality, which is where I got my most recent numbers from, and not anywhere in that report do they point out the dramatic decline. There is inequality in the country. It's somewhat worse than it was in the 1980s, but it moves up and down dramatically in with the movements of the economy.
Let's get back to campaign finance and campaign or really, you know, political support, because in Governor Cuomo's case, it's not that he's running for election. We've been talking this week about his big political spending ally, the Committee to Save New York, Wall Street and real estate developer at its core. They've become the biggest political spender in the state with no requirement to disclose their donors, technically independent, but created at Cuomo's request, from what I've read. So what is the Committee to Save New York, and do they own him or does he own them?
Oh, I think it's clear he owns them, by the way. And I think there's a lot of evidence to that effect. Look, let's do some historical context here. Governors going back to George Pataki were savaged when they attempted to go after specific interests, especially public sector workers and hospitals and healthcare, the healthcare workers union, by these massive advertising campaigns that were generated by unions. It dramatically changed policy under Pataki. It dramatically changed policy under Spitzer. And it was a big problem for David Paterson. So Andrew Cuomo came in and said, that's not going to happen to me, and I'm going to have someone who's going to have a war chest so that if the unions attack me publicly, I can respond. And that is the origin of the Committee to Save New York. Are they a special interest group? Absolutely. But I think we should be clear that they're no more a special interest than the public, than the teachers union or the healthcare workers union or their allies in the hospital. Now, who owns who? I would give you two pieces of evidence that Cuomo owns them. Evidence number one, as you pointed out, real estate interests give an enormous amount of money to the Committee to Save New York. Yet when it came time to renew the rent regulation bill, it was done on Cuomo's terms, not on the terms the real estate community wanted. As a matter of fact, they were quietly furious about it. And also, I think just the whole way that he maneuvered this whole issue about gambling and having the committee support it shows he owns them. The reason it's happening, though, is that in so many ways, the Committee to Save New York's policies and what Andrew Cuomo is doing are exactly aligned. So they are aligned. The test will come if Cuomo does something that is fundamentally at odds with the interests of these people, and then we'll see.
The Times editorial page today wonders about the legitimacy of their tax-exempt status. As a 501c4 nonprofit, they can spend lots of money on politics, but they're supposed to have a central social welfare mission. Could they make that case that they do in court if it comes to that?
Well, I think there are going to be some challenges about the Committee to Save New York, and I'm all for disclosure. I personally think it would be a great idea that people who gave them money should have to say where it is. I think that disclosure in all cases is a good thing, and we should have general and complete disclosure. I just want to make sure that everybody understands. There was one of the New York Times pieces that they did really sort of offended me, because the first piece they did, where they tracked down the money for the Committee to Save New York, had no context about how fundamentally the Committee to Save New York is a response to what other people have done in just this way before.
The unions in particular.
Absolutely.
One more thing before you go, and on another but also related topic. The dismal national jobs report last week contrasts with the measure we were talking about here the week before, a 60-year high in the pace of job creation in New York City in the first quarter of this year. Is New York that immune from national trends?
Unbelievable, isn't it? I guess so. Look, I think the numbers are a little overstated because of seasonal adjustment factors. But yes, New York has done spectacularly for about 2 years now. We're probably at an all-time employment peak. Moreover, I mean, why are we doing it? Well, tech is growing. You know, there's a lot of evidence of that. Tourism continues to be strong. But the most perplexing part of it is that despite all these layoffs supposedly on Wall Street employment is steady or slightly growing. The New York
economy. So all the Obama regulation hasn't killed their profitability?
Well, it has hurt their profitability, but the employment numbers don't show it yet either. I actually don't have a good answer for you about why, and I keep asking people about it. But yes, the New York economy seems to be very strong, and we thought there was a fourth quarter slowdown here, like the rest of the, but there wasn't one. At the moment, I see no reason why it won't continue, barring some great financial crisis that comes out of Europe.
Greg David, columnist for Crane's New York Business, director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, and the author of the recent book, Modern New York, The Life and Economics of a City. Greg, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehren, WNYC, and we have the governor of Connecticut next to continue a lot of these same themes. Dale Malloy, stay with us.